Well, maybe. I'll make it. We'll see. We will see. Yes?
I'd like to be able to understand better how those of us, I mean, all of us that possess an ego and utilize that ego, how with the ego we fight the ego.
Oh. Yeah. I feel that, yes, there's another question in here. You know, I think this question of ego, you were here when I was telling you the story of the drop on the ocean? Oh, this is why. Yes, you see, the story of the drop on the ocean is this. I'll repeat it for you. This is a story of a little drop of rain, they say, was falling down from sky, from the clouds. And it was very proud of itself because it realized that it was the water of life. And water of life is very, very precious. It's the most precious thing in this creation. And so that drop of rain was very proud of itself as it was coming down until it suddenly saw the ocean beneath it. And when it saw the ocean, it saw its own insignificance, and it shouted and it said, if this exists, then what am I? Up to then he hadn't seen the ocean, you see. And when it said this, the ocean attracted it to itself and made it part of the ocean, became a part of the ocean. Now this story is very apt in here. We are all like that drop of rain, and the self is that call, is that voice within us, which you call it ego, which is proud of itself. Not until we see the greatness of the revelation of Baha'u'llah that I was talking about yesterday again. And that is a very important key. Not until we see that. Now again, if you were not here yesterday, maybe sometime you can refer to some of these tapes. We talked about this. Or those of you who will be tomorrow, maybe I can read for you some passages which you can see what a tremendous revelation this is. Not until you see that great ocean and recognize it, we will not become humble. Humility, true humility really comes then when you see yourself as utter nothingness. Then the self will go into the background. Yes? Yeah, good. Okay, well, I think this is, to me, this is the answer I have. We must, not until we recognize the greatness of this revelation and turn to him, we turn to him with a feeling of awe and wonder, can we recognize our own impotence. And then the self will disappear, or will not complete. We cannot destroy the self. We must not destroy the ego. If the ego is there, you cannot destroy it as long as we live here. I was mentioning, I don't think we better go into that now. take us further and further. Any other questions that you have? Very good. Yes, yes, please. Shout about it. What is this? How many what?
Tablets of Ahmad.
How many?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And also in the tablets of Ahmad, where it says, be as a flame of fire to my enemies, and a river of life to my soul.
Well, you said how many tablets of Ahmad there are, isn't it? Isn't it the first question, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there are several tablets which are written for people called Ahmad. But they were different people. You see now? There is one particular which is very famous. That's what you say. There is another one which is also famous, and Shoghi Effendi has translated parts of it in the gleanings, parts of it. Although his name does not appear as Ahmad in that particular part, but that's another tablet. And there are other tablets which are written for other people called Ahmad. So it's not easy to say how many tablets of Ahmad there are. There may be several, depending on the number of people whom Baha'u'llah had written to different Ahmads. Ahmad is a very common name. But there are two which are very famous, and well known amongst the believers. One is the one we always read and call it the Tablet of Ahmad, and most believers are familiar with it. The other one is an Ahmad who was very different type of a person altogether than the other one. One was the embodiment of purity and sanctity, and the other one was the opposite. And Baha'u'llah wrote to both of them. The one that we read, of course, is that Ahmad who really was so detached from the things of this world that Baha'u'llah has given him such a great station. Now, when you say that Baha'u'llah has said that be as a flame of fire to my enemies and arrive and a river of life eternal to my loved ones, well, it is not necessarily meaning that when you see the enemies you have to burn them up and destroy them. This is not what is meant. It's really meant, you see, a fire always in the writings. A fire is an instrument by which you can tear up and burn the veils which come between man and God. In the long obligatory prayer, you can say, make my prayer a fire that can burn away the barriers between me and God. So that when Baha'u'llah says that you should be as a fire, flame of fire to my enemies, In one sense, you could say it means that you should burn their veils of ignorance. A fire also warms up the hearts of people, you know. That's another thing, to warm them up. So that there are various tablets of Baha'u'llah in which he has in fact used these symbols very clearly. He has said in some tablets, for example, Baha'u'llah says to a person, he says, be as a flame of fire and with it warm up the hearts of people. So from these words you can deduce that it's not meant that you should become fierce with people. In fact, in one of his tablets, Baha'u'llah has made it very clear that we should never interpret anything in his writings into that state of fierceness and rising up against other people. He has mentioned that, and I've actually, I think, quoted it in his third volume of the Revelation of Baha'u'llah when we are describing the fire tablet. Baha'u'llah says, do not use those passages which I have used in the fire tablet as a pretext to rise up and to destroy people's lives or otherwise to become an aggressive person. He says, these passages we have revealed in order to indicate the sufferings which have been inflicted upon him. And that, he says, in this dispensation, we must be always loving people, even our enemies. This is the teachings of God, and it will never be changed. It is the eternal teaching of God. If that was what was in your mind, perhaps this may be the answer to it. All right? Yes?
I have a crucial question.
Oh, a crucial question we can't answer.
To myself.
Oh.
The tablet of Allah and the fire tablet, are those three pieces of relation to prayer on the one hand and reading the writings on the other? Are those, if you say those are reading the writings or praying,
You know, we cannot really here draw. There is nothing hardened. What do you say? There is nothing absolutely hard and fast rule that you can say this is one and that's the other. There are many prayers which are like tablets. And there are many tablets which are like prayers, half of them. So that we, again, remember, everything depends on your intentions and your heart. I can assure you that if every morning you read the prayers and thinking these are the writings, that will be acceptable to God. Of course it will be. You know, God is very, very forgiving. And he looks at your motives more than anything else. But I think this, you can't draw a line between it. And I think that both of them are correct. Uh-huh. I didn't exactly follow what you were saying, sorry. Anything else? Yes?
You mentioned somewhere along the line that there were some things that are counter to creation or...
That what?
Counter, that run run counter to the creative force of God, you might say unforgivable.
Oh.
That keeps our soul from progress.
Well, no, all I said was that one of them is what Baha'u'llah refers, what Christ refers to it, is sin against the Holy Ghost, which is, to us Baha'is, is the covenant breaking. Now that you mention that, I think it's not a bad idea if I talk to you a little bit about the covenant. Huh?
Yes.
You see, I mentioned yesterday a little bit about this, and now before I go there, I want to put your mind at ease. Somebody has written me a letter here called Carlos. I don't know who it is. Carlos, you are the one. Now, I wonder whether we should discuss this thing with you later on, because this is all about the obligatory prayer, isn't it? And if there is time, by all means, we can discuss it. But it's something that you and I can talk about it, asking some meanings of this and that. And the other person is called McGrath. It's you. Now, will you be here tomorrow? Will you be here tomorrow? Okay. Well, I'm just saying, in case we couldn't deal with it today, at least we can leave it. And there is another person. And there is another person who has written, his name is Thank You. Now, and this is about process of the lesser peace. Now, I'm just wondering whether that person will be here tomorrow.
No, but I can take it. It's my wife.
Oh. You will be here tomorrow? Huh?
Yes.
You will be? Oh, good. Well, then I like always to put the questions away. And that's how we did it. Right, successfully. Now we can talk. Oh, you are coming, yes?
Yes. Daniel, how are you, Daniel?
Yes. Yeah, what is the part?
It says here, the tablet of the world.
Yes.
But you recognize a similar expression with a different name and a different tablet?
No.
Okay, well, if you look at the name of the expression, in the index, you fail to translate the Jaliyah.
Oh. I didn't translate it, no? Well, that's my problem.
What's
that? Effulgences. I'm glad I'm not infallible, you know. I make a lot of mistakes. That's a great relief, actually, when you know that you are not infallible. I find it very good. And it's a great relief. And that's one of the bounties of God, really, that He has made us not infallible. And that we make all these. Well, friends, I think it's not a bad idea if we talk about the covenant. But before I talk about the covenant, there's one subject that maybe we can talk about it now, and that is to close the materials that we have been discussing so far about reading, saying the prayers, reading the writings, teaching the faith, and we said how important it is, and as we go do these things, our faith will grow. And I mentioned that we must not become rigid in anything in life. We should not become rigid. These are the basic principles that we have to observe. But you know, if you didn't today, you will do it tomorrow. Don't be worried about it. Although tomorrow may never come, that's another thing. But and don't keep me responsible now and say that you told us not to do it today. And but all I'm saying is this, that we must become very, very much assured of God's bounties, which will come to us if we take a little step towards teaching and towards reading. God will help us enormously. And I mentioned that you could examine, you could test these things. You could test Baha'u'llah and see how much He will change our lives. I've heard many friends have come to us and told us the same thing, that since they have been putting these things into practice, that they have been reading the writings religiously. I told you, like the story of the Irish girl I mentioned to you yesterday in Paris. Do you remember? Now, these people are so much out of the problems of this world that all the problems are no longer on their shoulders. They just feel a new person. They feel relieved of all things because their reliance is on Baha'u'llah. Although they may go through a great deal of suffering, But they know that this is a marvelous thing, and they endure it, and they love it, and they grow in the faith. So that all these points that I mentioned yesterday, the reading of the writings, the saying of the obligatory prayers, the living of the life, the teaching the cause, and the pioneering and making more local assemblies, really, these are the basic works which will help us to grow, and our faith will grow. But then there are dangers. Now, I'm going to mention some dangers for you here. Dangers. You know, if you possess a very nice thing, there are thieves who are ready to take it from you. If you have a beautiful treasure, there are thieves. There are some very dangerous robbers, highway robbers, who can rob it of you. Now that I'm talking of highway robbers, I remembered of a story which might be a good thing to hear it. Highway robbering. Do you know what highway robbering is? You've never been involved in it. Highway robbering is something which happened in the East very much. And when I was young, we used to go through it all the time. When you travel from one town to another, there are big deserts around. And these deserts, there are certain areas that men, armed men are there, bandits you call them. And they attack caravans and people who are traveling. And they will take all their things from them, everything they have. I think you had them in America years ago. You've forgotten the practice, huh? Nowadays, you don't do this. But in the old days, they used to do that. Now, in these highway robbers, there was a highway robber who somebody talked to him about the faith. And this is not a made-up story, really. And he became a Baha'i. But in those days, there were no local assemblies to help us. He just taught him the faith. He accepted Baha'u'llah and became a believer. But he continued in his work as a highway robber, you know. He was really sincerely. He was doing his job very well. He understood certain teachings, of course, and he also heard that in the faith there was no clergy, there were no priests. You know, this is one thing he heard, there was no priests in the faith. And he was very happy about that there were no priests, because after a year, when he met this Baha'i and he told him, "How are you doing?" He said, "My business is going on very well. In fact, it's much better than last year." Because he said, when I was a Muslim, I would never rob a clergyman, but now I do. Oh. Now this man later on really became a true Baha'i, and then he lived a life completely different, I can tell you that. We all change, you know. Yes, we were talking about highway robbers who robs you of everything. Now in the faith also, in our lives, there are very dangerous robbers for every one of us. Every one of us. In our lives. Which we have to be very careful. Once you become a Baha'i, and once you grow in the faith, and once you do all these things we mentioned, you have to be constantly watching. And it's a constant watching in the same way that you... I don't know what you do here, but in our countries we have burglar alarms and all kinds of things to protect us from this. Now there are three, I'm going to mention three very dangerous robbers of faith, who rob our faith away from us. The first one who robs it, and is the very dangerous one, is our own self, again an ego that we were talking about. That is the most dangerous thing, which can constantly direct us towards the animal world, the animal nature. I was mentioning the other day to some of the friends who were assembled here, it's like an aircraft. We are like the human being is like an aircraft. We have two things. One is the dead weight. You see, the aircraft has a dead weight, which means that dead weight that drags it down all the time. All the time it's ready to drag it down, to drop it. It is the weight, gravity. And then it has the engines, which are pulling it up. Now, the minute the engines are stopped, immediately the dead weight will pull the aircraft down. And it will not wait and say, "All right, I'll give you 3 minutes." No, immediately it pull it down. So that, you see, the engines is our faith. And it must be always revved up. It must always be operating, always be on. If you are not on our guard, this dead weight, which is the animal nature in man, you know, we have two natures, the animal nature, which we call itself. That is going to pull us down. And so the only thing which will stop it is our faith, which can pull it up. And it's very easy to come down, down the hill, then go up the hill. It will pull you down immediately.